The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
And thank you, everyone who's here tonight. My name is Joran, and I'm a senior student here at the Village Zendo. I want to start out this talk by expressing my gratitude for this past year of Village Zendo life, virtual and otherwise. This has been a really engaged year for me at the Village Zendo. Before the pandemic, I attended the Zendo when I could, stepping out of home life and work, mostly attending only for the all-day sits once a month, for the path class, and for retreats. I kind of had to make some limits in order to have the most kind of concentrated contact that I could with the Zendo. The period of being shuso for 3 months at the beginning of 2020 helped me to make a bigger commitment to Zendo activities, time and energy, and being in person at the Zendo at that point. But at the time, I considered that kind of an anomaly. I thought that things might go back to the previous limits after that 3 months of intense engagement. However, this increase of my Village Zendo activities just became more so as the Zendo went online just a few weeks after the Shuso Hosen ceremony, as things turned out. And so in this past year, I've been able to participate in many group meetings, small and large. Of course, the daily sits have transformed my daily practice from solitary to Sangha connected, which has had a really incredibly grounding effect. I've attended so many more Dharma talks. I've been able sometimes to participate in senior student meetings. I've continued with the monthly path class. And this time period has seen the formation of the Greenwood Cemetery Brooklyn Zazen Group, the only in-person activity, and which I've attended weekly since last September. And there have been two new shusos, and I've participated in the Ango retreats surrounding those shuso hosen processes. And so there's been really a hugely increased sense of connection. And finally, I've gotten so much out of being part of the White Work on Racism group with Yuka and Kyogen and all the participants in that group. So there's been a big step up for me, which has been really, really important. But if I had been doing all these things in person, it would have taken a real dent. Made a real dent in my home life and my working life. Somehow this virtual form makes it all possible, miraculously, in spite of all of the drawbacks of this time. So in this sense, everything this past year, despite everything, I have experienced an embarrassment of riches, as they say. Zendo riches during the pandemic. And even with all this intimate connection and this familiarity and this online immersion in the teachings from teachers and students, nevertheless, I can still come into intimate contact with my own sensitivity, my own capacity for embarrassment, as vivid as ever on Zoom. Especially when giving a Dharma talk. This being my third Dharma talk ever. Perhaps my capacity for embarrassment in a Dharma talk is even more so Given that there are greater numbers of people here tonight than might have been previously on a Thursday night. So I wanted to focus on embarrassment in this talk. My point of departure is a koan, Hugo's Three Embarrassments from the Book of Serenity. A monk asked Hugo, how is it when a crane stands on a withered pine? Hugo replied, an embarrassment to the ground below. The monk asked, how is it when a drop of water is a drop of ice? Hugo replied, an embarrassment after the sun comes out. The monk asked, at the time of the purge of Buddhist establishments in the 840s, where did the good spirits who guard the teachings go? Hugo replied, an embarrassment for the two of them at the temple gate. That last line is somewhat mysterious. Did the two good spirits, spirit guardians at the temple gate, think they could prevent the purge? Did they think they could be in control of those violent events? Were they not able, if they were not able to control the violent events of the purge of the 840s, did they abandon their posts, their roles, and did the teachings disappear as a result of their inability to control the situation? Is any of this different from being confronted with a drop of water and trying to prevent it from freezing in the cold or melting in the sun? What is this embarrassment of Hugo's about? So I tend to identify a lot with the state of embarrassment, its visceral poignancy, being all wrapped up in one separate self, naked and exposed. As a kid in a family with lots of expectations for performance and requirements for behavior, I internalized my parents' sense of embarrassment when their kids fell short or acted out or just failed to keep the show moving, failed at keeping things pleasantly entertaining. I tend to embarrass easily. As an introvert, throughout my life, I've struggled with embarrassment. There have been times when I may have been hesitant to step out for fear of embarrassing myself or ferociously self-critical after opening up. Like many of us, I have a powerful reflex of self-judgment that gets in the way. I can truly say that I've missed some great opportunities in order to avoid those feelings of embarrassing myself. And I've also been embarrassed by stuff that is just life. As a parent, I continually become more aware of some of the punishing ideologies with which I was raised and which I also internalized. I'm embarrassed when I see them reappear in my own parenting. One example among an endless number, I'm embarrassed when I think about the power struggle I had with my 8-year-old son in Target when he wanted to buy a toy that was over the budget we had agreed on. It got heated and perhaps a little loud, so much so that a man standing near us shopping with his child offered to pay the difference. Embarrassing. What lesson was I really teaching my son in that moment as I lost myself in some school of hard knocks and bootstraps? I'm continually running up against the myriad ways that I respond uncompassionately toward my child when I'm embarrassed by their behavior, just as my parents were embarrassed by mine. My judgmental comparisons of my child with other people's children, blinded in those moments to what my child might need, what they're trying to tell me. As I mentioned, I'm grateful for the opportunity to participate in the White Work on Racism group with Yuka and Jogan. This has been a serious teaching for me this past year, and the exploration of whiteness is so sensitive. This deep questioning of who we are and where these values originate exposes a lot. We are exposed in this exploration. Perhaps seeing ourselves as a crane standing at the top of a withered pine. What kinds of changes are we actually willing to bear witness to on the ground? What sense of self can we let go of as the drop of water becomes a drop of ice and then melts away in the sun? In the White Work on Racism, we've explored these sensitivities as they intermingle with becoming aware of being part of systems of racial, class, caste oppression. This process of awareness can definitely bring up embarrassment. Embarrassment about being unaware, embarrassment of past actions and words, and then embarrassment about not being able to fix it, like the guardians at the temple gate. Among many other feelings and responses, there's embarrassment at being inextricably part of systems that harm and separate. At the same time, embarrassment doesn't help. It creates its own separations, rendering me unable to move. How to move out of the separation of embarrassment into bigger, more empowered, a bigger, more empowered picture? As Yuka wrote recently in a message to the Sangha, how can we let suffering move through us instead of getting tangled up in our selfly status? There's embarrassment that's just me, separate and alone. Then there's a different kind of embarrassment, not the social self-checking, but the embarrassment of bearing witness to suffering itself, where the impulse to control is a kind of denial of the reality of suffering. The crane standing on the top of the dead pine is a moment of stunning natural verticality, an embarrassment to the gravity-bound ground below. The drop of water is fluid and then frozen, then evaporated, and then gone. The impulse to try and hold it is embarrassing. Embarrassment is not really the word for becoming aware of one's own benefits from systems of white supremacy and privilege. Shame, outrage, heartbreak, mourning might be more appropriate words. But there may be embarrassment in becoming aware of oneself at the center of the inquiry. And there may be embarrassment again and again in letting go of that self. There's garden variety embarrassment, like messing up the liturgy during a service, spacing out, not getting a koan, wearing your getting it and you're not getting it on your forehead, as in the commentary of this koan. This monk's effort in his ignorant sitting was consummate. He took this little bit of the scenery of the fundamental ground and stuck it on his forehead, showing everyone he met. In the Jiandai teachings, this is called the fall of the pinnacle. That is why Hu Guo said an embarrassment on the ground below. The monk keeps asking, what is the Buddha nature of true thusness? The answer he gets is, who has it? Self. Not self. Letting go of the self is a shaky feeling. Recognizing how much of oneself is bound up in oppressive structures. Yeah, this is a shaky feeling. Like the precariousness of the crane standing on a dead pine, ideals topple over or fly off. There's embarrassment in the face of all the things we can't control. This year has exposed our fragilities as a culture. This exposure is an opportunity to practice those fragilities, to change, to move from fixed positions. So I do love etymology. The etymology of the word embarrass can be traced back through French, Spanish, Portuguese, Italian, to Latin, with various meanings. From the Portuguese embarazo, halter, through these other languages, to perplex, throw into doubt, to block, to bar, to hamper, to hinder, a cord, a strap, or a noose. In English, at some point, embarrass meant to confine within bars, and finally, to be indebted. So to be embarrassed is not only to have some complicated emotions, but also to be stopped, burdened, and unable to move. So just to repeat this line that Yuka wrote, which I love: letting suffering move through us without becoming tangled up in our selfly status. In my personal exploration of whiteness, I'm aware of moving and stopping short, taking action to move beyond the boundaries of white spaces into places and relationships that are new to me, but then getting hindered by the question, who am I now? As in, okay, now that's done. Now what do I look like? This constant concern, this embarrassment of being stuck in self-consciousness, just a hair's breadth outside of relationship. The monk in the koan is going around asking, what is the Buddha nature of true thusness? The answer he receives is, who has it? So there's the embarrassment of taking responsibility. It's me. But not stopping there at that dead end. It's experiencing self as movement, as change, as no self. For me, the experience of embarrassment is being overwhelmed with feelings, exposed and stuck there, outside of myself, beside myself, being too much myself or stuck in myself. The monk in the koan is engaged in a teaching about the ideal, which is the crane, and the reality of change, the ground. In the commentary of the koan, there's a poem which talks about this difference, referring to two monks with different styles of practice. These two monks are walking on the road. One says, time flies, run on up. Stepping on the road, the rarest flower blossoms. The other says, the great way is vast. What's the rush? Opening up his belly skin, he engulfs all at once. This second monk is referred to in the commentary as being resigned and retiring. Not fast, not enough. Waited, embarrassed. But he opens up his belly skin, exposing his guts. And in this process, he engulfs all at once. Trying to respond to everything as it arises, but getting ahead of myself, not having time to catch up with my feelings, getting beside myself, being here, aspiring to be there. Embarrassment as the extreme discomfort of acknowledging difference. The stark distinction between the stunning appearance of the high and the weighted density of the low. The extreme discomfort of desire and the acknowledgement of constant transformation of high and low, having and losing, life and death. And then there's embarrassment at not being able to control things, to prevent harm, to make up for loss. So I'm a teacher, and leading up to a final online group exhibition of final media art projects this past Monday, my students were brimming with excuses for not achieving what they'd set out to do this semester. Many students were feeling personally inadequate, overwhelmed, and embarrassed by not making a better showing. The individual struggle that each one engaged in wasn't helped really by knowing that everyone was going through it too. But what emerged overall from the screening of projects on Monday was not perhaps a dazzling display of virtuosity, not the rarest flower blossoming, not the crane standing on the top of the dead pine, but a more multifaceted diary of the past year, each project poignantly and powerfully documenting the difficulty, opening up the belly skin, engulfing all at once. Projects focused on many different aspects. For one, trauma at being tear gassed up against the wall, having friends arrested during protests, intermingled with her memories of chopping cherry tomatoes with friends afterwards, trying to recover. For others, the lonely experience of being isolated and becoming paranoid, grappling with mental health issues, becoming flooded with media consciousness, undermining all other kinds of experiences, being alone in a room, losing people, having a friend in prison. Many students were expressing embarrassment at not having accomplished more this semester and this year, but those who made it to Monday's show had somehow made it through their embarrassment, showing their guts and their liver. Their project succeeded in bearing witness to the radical changes that had been happening all this year and that they had been living through, seeing all around them, and the toll being taken on themselves and others. So the cumulative effect of seeing these media art projects and engaging in discussion about them ended up in creating a container, which I think everyone there really recognized and really appreciated, and feeling a part of that experience that everyone had gone through together. And the document, in a sense, that their projects had created during this intense time of experience. So it was a different kind of exhibition, a different kind of value from judging the success or failure of each individual project. So I will end with a last, yet another nod to my embarrassment, claiming a recent Shuso privilege and the chance to reuse this wonderful line one last time from the Shuso Hosen. I hope there is enough water in the Atlantic for you to rinse out my words from your ears. The Village Zendo Sangha and you people are seriously worth this practice of embarrassment.